There are Jews in the world, there are Buddhists, there are Hindus and Mormons, and then there are those that follow Mohammed, but I've never been one of them.
How's your faith these days, Father?
Fie Jesu Domine, dona eis requiem.
Oh Lord, oh you are so big, so absolutely huge.
Do you think maybe he's compensating for something?
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
What did we learn?
I don't know, sir.
I don't fucking know either.
Hello, this is the first time you've listened to my podcast. Welcome. And if you're coming back for the umpteenth billionth time, welcome again. Sorry I've been so quiet. I'm going to make up for the lost time, I promise. But I felt like today I would just focus on yesterday. Because I missed it. I was really tired. I worked 21 hours straight, took an hour nap, and went right back to work. And today I'm working for 16 hours. I feel like I got something to do, so I figured I would... Okay. That was kind of harsh of me. Anyway, back to what I was saying before I was rudely interrupted. I'm going to do some bonus episodes to cover the texts that we missed in the couple of weeks that I was dealing with my personal stress, anxiety, and issues, and get us back on track, because I said I was going to do every single lectionary reading for the Sundays in the Gospels, and, well, I gotta fix it, right? I gotta catch up. Anyway, today, though, we are going to deal with yesterday, which is September 18th. It wasn't anything special in the day, but it was a reading that we need to go over. And it's particularly important because of what it says. So let's get to it. It's Luke chapter 16, verse 1 through 15. Then Jesus said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was squandering his property. So he summoned him and said to him, 'What is this that I hear about you? Give me an accounting of your management, because you cannot be my manager any longer.' Then the manager said to himself, 'What will I do now that my master is taking the position away from me? I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I've decided what to do so that when I'm dismissed as a manager, people may still welcome me into their homes.' So, summoning his master's debtors one by one, he asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' He answered, 100 jugs of olive oil.' He said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 50. Then, when he asked another, 'And how much do you owe?' He replied, 100 containers of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill and make it 80. And his master commended the dishonest manager, because he acted shrewdly. For the children of his age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes. Whoever is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much, and whoever is dishonest in a very little is dishonest also in much. If then you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? No slave can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both wealth and God." The Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all this, and they ridiculed him. So he said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves in the sight of others, but God knows your hearts. For what is prized by human beings is an abomination in the sight of God. What a story. Honestly, it's the strangest parable Jesus told. And it's definitely one of the strangest stories we have in the Bible. Now, there's some other strange stories that appear in collections like the Gospel according to Thomas, the Gospel of Mary, the Testament of Joseph of Arimathea, and all the, so many others. But you know what? They did not make it into the Bible. So let's think about this. If we're reading this little clip from Luke correctly, Jesus is literally telling us to imitate a crook, a scoundrel. He cheats on his employer. He lies about his business associates. And then Jesus says, now here's someone from whom we need to learn. What the hell? How? What are we missing? What are we missing that the people in Jesus' time and world knew? How did they hear this story and receive it in the same sense of religious authority? So let's take a minute and let's look at that. A Fortune 500 tycoon finds out that his administrators mismanaged things horribly. He's squandered away properties, he's reduced the value of holdings, he's brought the estate to the edge of bankruptcy. It's time to act. So the tycoon calls the manager in. The manager knows immediately that he's done for. Right? Out the door. No severance. So what's he going to do? His hands are too soft. His back's too weak to be a laborer. He's too proud to beg. So he picks up Dale Carnegie's book. How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he checks the stack of accounts due, and he calls in the people who owes his boss money, and he slices their bills drastically. So, obviously, the people who owed that money and those debts were pleased as hell. But, get this, so's the tycoon. He praises the manager for being such a shrewd duck. Why? Why commend a fellow for his dishonesty, especially when it rips another chunk of value off of the estate? And why does Jesus want us to be like him? What the hell's his point? So let's run it down from the top once more. Let's put this into the frame again. Let's walk through it. Let's see what we're missing. So Richard Rich is the biggest man in town. He's the local billionaire. Much of the regional economy depends on his holdings and what he does. Tons of people work for him, and many are renters and sharecroppers on his estate. He has such a big operation to run. He brings in Dirk Director with his freshly stamped MBA. Things are going well for a while. Richard Rich finally gradually gives Dirk Director full responsibility of the operation. It allows Richie to go play golf as much as he wants and spend some more time at the health spas down in Masada. He gets to make his Vegas trip every year with the boys that gamble and golf. You know, Richard Rich ain't no fool, though. He still reads those annual reports and the P&L reports, and something's wrong. So he does a little investigation, and Dirk Director's fingerprints show some pretty ugly smudges. And it's time for the boss to take control again. So he calls Dirk in, shows the evidence, and tells him to pack his bags. Well, Dirk knows he's been caught. He doesn't protest. He doesn't point fingers. He doesn't argue that it's all a mistake. He just hangs his head, turns away, beaten, and this is where it gets interesting. Richard Rich could have put Dirk in jail. Jesus tells other stories like that, but in this one he doesn't. And he could trump up Dirk's indiscretions far and wide, making it near impossible for Dirk to ever work in the neighborhood again. But he doesn't do that either. In fact, this Fortune 500 tycoon and Richie Rich seem to be a rather caring gentleman. He keeps the matter quiet so that Dirk Director can bow out gracefully. Dirk's no longer managing the estate, but only Dirk and Richie Rich know that. And that gives Dirk some time to play a final card from his hand. Instead of packing, Dirk ran quickly to get some of Richie's debtors who live close by. They've always done business with Dirk, and now they have no idea that he's been canned. He shows up at the house. They assume he's still in charge. Hey, quick, where's your IOU for my master? Let's tear that up and we're going to rewrite this thing for half the amount. And they do it. And remember, the fact that these people so easily allowed Dirk to change the bill means two things. They sincerely believe that he was still the manager, and that he had the authority to act as an agent for Mr. Rich. Also, they were very sure that Mr. Rich had stipulated these transactions. If they thought Dirk was doing this out of his own, and Mr. Rich found out about it, they'd all be thrown in jail. Because, you know, partners in the swindle are nabbed in the same judgment. And it all happened so fast. The contract for 800 gallons of olive oil is cut in half. The bill for 1,000 bushel of wheat reduced by 200. And actually, each of these slicings has about the same monetary value, about 500 denarii. So, you get the idea that Dirk was acting mostly in haste. He didn't have time to figure out percentages or calculate market trends. He just lopped off about 500 denarii's worth from each settlement package. The deed's done. Now, according to Jesus, it doesn't take long for Richie to figure out what's happened. After all, good news travels fast. I need to untie my tongue for a second. Blah. And the word on the street is that he's become quite the hero. In fact, those who have just had their debts reduced come crowding at his door because local custom requires that they voice their thanks. So there they are, mobbing his mansion and shouting his praise. What a generous man! So what does he do? What can he do? He has two alternatives, honestly. And revoke the... he can tell the tale of Dirk Director's scheme and revoke the cuts that Dirk made to their bills. Or he can keep quiet about the affair and just let things stand as they are. Now, if he does the first, he stands to lose a lot of face. None of the debtors would have grumbled about the bills before. They were lawful. They were binding. But now they've seen a moment of grace, and even though they were not expecting it, they've begun to live out of its freedoms and its promises. Now, if Mr. Rich takes these blessings and waves he just received, he looks pretty stingy and greedy. But what happens if he doesn't? I mean, it seems like he cares more about the wealth than he does about the people. Mr. Rich takes away the blessings they've just received. He takes the brunt of all that shit. Because Dirk Director comes out smelling like a rose. After all, he wasn't cheating himself. He was only seeking the welfare of the debtors. He can't be a bad man if he works for the good of the community. So he'll have a welcome in every home, which is just what he wanted in the first place. Now if Mr. Rich decides that to keep the matter quiet, now that's a whole different scenario. The people of the community will praise him for his generosity and his esteem will increase enormously. You see the picture that Jesus is leaving us with? Richie Rich stands at the door of his home surrounded by the praise of the community. At his side is Dirk Director grinning at the success of his scheme, and Mr. Rich slaps him on the shoulder laughing at the good joke that's been played. Dirk gained a lot of friends. Mr. Ridge rose in the esteem of the community, and everyone feels good and the whole town celebrates. Now this is going to give a moral to the story, right? I mean, that's what Jesus does. There's a moral. What does he want to say to his disciples? Oh, he's clearly not telling us to be dishonest. That's not the way it works. He's not saying go and do likewise. He's probably got some attitude in mind, which he wants people to copy. And there's one thing that holds the story together. If there's one idea around which everything revolves, if there's one quality of character on which all the details hinge, it's the generosity of the master. Think of it. It was the generosity of Mr. Rich that made it possible for Dirk to do what he did. The generosity of the master gave his CEO time to put his affairs in order rather than sending him right off to prison and public disgrace. The generosity of the master was the key to the scheme. The debtors heard Dirk change the terms of the bills in their favor, and they said to themselves, yeah, isn't that like Mr. Rich? He's a generous man, all right. And when the crowd gathers at the Mansion House, Jesus concludes the story. A cry of delight celebrates the master's great generosity. So, perhaps the main point of this parable is not to teach us how to be dishonest in order to make a buck, or to secure something for ourselves. Instead, the main point is this. Do you know the great generosity of God, and are you making the full use of it? Have you mined the resource of heaven to its fullest extent? Does the world around you celebrate the goodness of your master? The master commends the steward for making fine use of his generosity, not to line his own pockets, but to spread the blessings of the master throughout the community. And in the same way, Jesus expects his followers to learn the great generosity of God, and to make use of it in spreading his blessings throughout the world. As the manager knew that the most admirable character of his master was his generosity, so we should learn about our parent in heaven. And that rings true with Jesus' statements in verses 8 through 9. This son of this world, that is, the steward, was wise. He knew that using the generosity of his master was the only way he could survive the pressures of the times in which he lived. So too we, the people of the light, ought to be wise enough to know that we hope that if we hope to survive the pressures of the times in which we live, only our hope is found in the generosity of God. In the words of the old hymn, "He giveth more grace than the burden grows greater. He sendeth more strength when the labors increase. To added affliction he addeth his mercy. To multiplied trials he's multiplied peace. Love has no limit. His grace has no measure. His power has no boundaries known unto men. For out of his infinite riches in Jesus he giveth and giveth and giveth again. The generosity of God. Only those who discover God's great generosity become generous people themselves. The character of our spirituality is not seen and known primarily by those many times we go to church, or by the songs we sing, or by the prayers we pray, or the confessions we make, but rather the character of our spirituality is felt in the level of our generosity towards those around us. One person put it this way: if you want to know the quality of a person's heart, check in the mirror of her checkbook. If you're greedy in little ways, you'll be tiny in dimensions of your soul. If generosity doesn't characterize your use of money, your heart's not in time with Jesus. It's like a character from Roland Pertwee's short story, The Voice That Said Goodnight. If Philip Gaylor is found dead in his chair one morning. Someone twisted his neck and broke it, but who? Could have been anybody, says Charles Crichton to the investigating officer. After all, he says, Gaylor was the kind of beast who kept his soul in the trousers of his pocket along with other small change. Can you see it? A man who keeps his soul in a pocket with the rest of the small change. A man is spiritually bankrupt. Just like, says Jesus, those who haven't learned the true generous spirit of God. Do you know what it is to reveal in the generosity of God? Any dealer goes in pilgrims at Tinker's Creek. She writes, God's creation loves pizzazz. Now what she meant by pizzazz is the outlandish generosity of God that sparkles through the universe. Jesus knew the pizzazz of heaven's great grace. After all, he was part of it. Poet William Wordsworth praised those who found pizzazz in God in their lives. He spoke of the generous spirit whose, quote, high endeavors are an inward light that makes the path before him always bright, end quote. So, do you have some of that in your life? Are you living in the generosity of God? The character of our spirituality is felt in the level of our generosity towards those around us. In that way, we reflect the generosity of God. That being said, I hope you're generous with your grace with me. I'm sorry I've missed a couple of weeks, and I'm going to keep going. I love doing this, and sometimes it might be too much to bear, sometimes it's too little to bear. I don't know what else to say. But I want to thank everyone who's made it to this part, and I want to thank my partner. I can't wait to be with you. I want to thank my friends and family who actually listen. And above all, I want to thank you, the stranger who I haven't met, who's decided to listen to this little podcast. It means everything to me. I have no clue who you are, but I love you and thank you. I hope you feel my generosity. Now, of course, if you look down in the description, you're going to find a link. In that link is all the places you can find me, all the affiliates who help keep me going. Please feel generous. And you can subscribe, and when I start getting subscribers, I will start daily readings. I won't be like actually guiding you through any sermons or anything for them, but I will do daily readings and maybe a little hint, so to speak. Also, there's going to be special sermons and homilies about, and talks, I should say, about other things. I might also invite a kid or two to kind of get a child's perspective on the things that we read on Sunday mornings. I thought that would be kind of cool. Other things. Twitch. I have been not showing up on Twitch, but that's going to change to on Tuesday. Probably after you read this, you might already have been done. But Tuesdays and Fridays, I try to go on to Twitch and stream and play games and act a fool. Please join me and laugh, because that is what I'm doing it for. Anyways, thank you. I love you. And remember that all are welcomed. Jesus, ducking Christ.